Hello and welcome to the Back Nine Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Well, Carlos, I'm fantastic. I'm coming to you live from Orlando. We made it to the warmth of Florida, and I even got to play a little golf this week. So I want to thank Hammock Beach Resort for a wonderful couple of days at their beautiful facility, plus Tour Edge golf products, Encore golf ball, Swing Speed, and Golf 8.5, who sponsored a great day of information and golf at Lake Nona yesterday. I'm here for the annual PGA Golf Show, which we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show, but the annual demo day was held today, and the show itself kicks off tomorrow in the Orange County Convention Center, so look forward to that. But first, tonight, it was a big week for the Spaniards as both John Rahm and Sergio won last week. I know you're happy about that. Tommy Fleetwood continued his strong play with a win in Abu Dhabi. Jared Kelly slipped past Monty in Hawaii, plus the ladies get going this week in the Bahamas, and we're excited about that. So, Carlos, as always, we got a lot of golf to talk about, so let's go. Let's get to it.
Let's get to it. There's a lot to talk about. And, yes, I understand that you are sacrificing for the good of the show going there.
Working.
Because I understand this also. Yeah, I understand that, you know, there's snow there in Ohio, so you have to get away from it, and let's go to Florida. I mean, it's better there. It's warm. There's nothing to do, right? So you are just sacrificing yourself back there.
I know.
But like you said, we have a lot of golf to talk. But I'm going to start with a happy belated birthday to the Golden Bear, Jack Nicklaus, who turned 78 on Sunday. Oh, he had an excellent day. Sure, you know, his family and friends, and we're pulling for him to celebrate many, many more. So happy birthday, Jack. And, you know, I also found out that he shares a birthday with Georges Vezina, which is the late Canadian ice hockey goalie after whom the Vezina Trophy was named, and also with NBA Hall of Famer Hakeem Olajuwon, who turned 55. So happy belated birthday to the Dream. Also, this past week, former LPGA player, three-time major champion Mary Mills, turned 78, just like Jack Nicklaus, but she did it on Friday. And there were no other notable golfers having birthdays this past 7 days, but the greatest, Muhammad Ali, would have been 75 last Wednesday. He died, as you all know, in 2016. And today, sisters Jessica and Nelly Korda should be celebrating with their dad. I mean, the former tennis great Peter Korda turned 50 today, so happy birthday to him. Those are the birthdays for this past week. And now we're going to turn to the Week in Backspin, where every week, Fred and I recap the action on the weekend's major tournaments on the major tours. So, Fred, you're going to talk about the PGA Tour and the Career Builder Challenge, where somebody that, I don't know, I think I have never spoken about him before, John Rahm, I think, won there, right?
He did, and he has now won two of his last three starts worldwide, and finished runner-up to Dustin Johnson in his other start at the Century Tournament of Champions at Kapalua. This win also moves him ahead of Jordan Spieth into the number two spot on the official world golf ranking, and he trails only Dustin Johnson. Rahm joins Seve, Jose Maria Olazabal, and Sergio is the only Spaniards to reach number two in the world ranking. Well, of course, Seve was the only one of that group to make it to number one. The win at Palm Springs this week was not easy, though. Rahm could not flinch on a single shot, with Andrew Landry nipping at his heels and making birdie on the 72nd hole to force a playoff. Landry then had birdie putts inside 25 feet on each of the first playoff holes, but Rahm was the first one to actually make one when he sunk his 12-footer on the fourth playoff hole. Landry missed from a foot closer, and that was it. Give Rahm the big check and the trophy. John Rahm, Adam Hadwin, and Martin Piller all were two shots behind the leaders to finish tied for third. perhaps channeling his inner Grandpa Palmer, who loved Palm Springs. Sam Saunders made the biggest move of the day with an 8-under par 64 that moved him up 34 places to come in at T8. Arnold won the first Palm Springs Desert Golf Classic in 1960 and won his fifth title here, plus his final PGA Tour victory in 1973 over Johnny Miller and your guy Jack Nicklaus that you just talked about his birthday. Brant Snedeker, Bill Haas, Patrick Reed, and Phil Mickelson all missed the cut and were not around for the Sunday showdown. In a side note, old school golfer, two-time U.S. Open winner, and notorious competitor Curtis Strange did not like the way Landry and Rahm chatted each other up between shots in the playoff. Strange wants to make you uncomfortable and force a mistake. He's all about the win. You know what? I disagree with Curtis. Yeah, I want to see guys compete, but golf is not life and death. It does not need to be as intense as what we used to see from Tiger Woods. Yeah, I want to see good shots and competitive spirit, but the guys can be friends. That's what these young guys are showing us today. After all, isn't that ultimately what golf is all about? Competition, but everybody enjoys the fight and has a beer when it's all over. Carlos, that's about all I've got to say about the Career Builder Challenge this week.
John Rahm. Can I go on?
John Rahm.
Can I
you go, man. I knew you'd want to talk about it.
Of course. I mean, his meteoric rise continues. He's just 23. He has already, like you said, won twice on both the PGA Tour and the European Tour. Wherever he tees it up, I mean, he plays the game in an attacking style. That is why winning him is plenty of praise and an army of fans. Just look at the eyes when he's in contention, and you'll definitely see a player who thrives in the spotlight. I mean, this wasn't the strongest field in California, given. Nor was the stadium course the sternest test. But in many ways, that made the victory all the more impressive because everyone was bombing the ball off the tee and reaching the par fives in two, which leveled out the contest to a certain degree. Yet, Rahm, he proved he had that little bit extra. He had that winning experience, unlike a number of the chasing back, and he backed himself to putt his way to victory. So definitely, I mean, he's already number two. Watch out, DJ. He's coming for you. He's going to be number one. I've said it before. He's coming for you. You know, Patton Kizzier, that we have been talking about him also, he's the early leader in the FedEx Cup. He was the Sony Open winner, but he didn't have his A game this week. However, this is a name that we might be hearing quite a lot. He's very consistent, so he's going to make his cuts. He reminds me a lot of Matt Kuchar. But in finishing T42, this was just his second finish outside the top 15 in his past seven starts. He has made the cut all the time. That was a day of birdies. And on a forgiving layout, only birdies were going to get the job done. And Austin Cook, who led by one overnight, yet he only managed two birdies and racked up two very costly double bogeys to slump to a final round 75. We saw him slip outside the top 10. And you know, you guys know that I said that I was going to pick somebody to be the PGA Tour Rookie of the Year because I didn't want it to get Peter Uihlein. I mean, it's so easy to say, okay, Peter Uihlein's going to be the one. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to name Austin Cook. He's going to be the Rookie of the Year this year. So, written today, January 23rd, 2018, Austin Cook over Peter Uihlein. Sorry, Peter. I mean, you did it there in the European Tour, but here I'm going to pick Austin.
And, I may argue with you. I might take Peter on that. I he's starting off the year well. He's looking good. I think Uihlein's going to have a really good year in the PGA.
Okay. No problem. I'm going to cook Peter Uihlein on this one. Austin Cook. You go. So anyway, let's move on.
Well, you're never wrong about this stuff. I don't know why I even bother because you're always right. So I'll give it a shot.
If there's a year that I know that I can miss it, it's gonna be this one. Peter really has done everything there in the European Tour. He has honed his skills. He has gone all over the world. He knows how to play. He knows how to win. So, I don't know. You know, Austin Cook already won, but he has his work cut out to beat Peter this year. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Anyway, like I was saying on the European tour, number one, Tommy Fleetwood. He produced a remarkable back 930 to overhaul fellow Englishman Ross Fisher and successfully defend the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship that he won 12 months ago. It was another thrilling day there in the desert where Fisher looked set to win his first tournament since the Shawani Open in 2014, but he could do nothing to stop Fleetwood's inspired charge. After Fisher eagled a par 5 second from 50 foot and made further gains at 4 and 7, he left the playing field catching up with Rory McIlroy, looking like the main man capable of catching him, which would have been some story itself given the Ulster fans' 3 months absence recovering from an injury. But after Fisher bogey on the par 5 10th, Fleetwood was the one that emerged as a danger as his putter and round caught fire on the back nine with birdies in 10, 12, and 13 before he sank two more from distance at the 15 and 16, and then he birdied the last. I mean, he was, if you say on fire, he was supernova fire. It all added up to a 7-under par 65 and left Fisher needing an eagle on the par 5 18 to force a playoff, but his chip for a 3 failed to trouble the hole and gave Fleetwood, who celebrated his 27th birthday on Friday, win number 4 on the European Tour. You know, Fleetwood told Sky Sports Golf, and I'm going to quote him, "I put in a lot of work. I wanted to prepare for this year like I didn't win the race to Dubai. It was important to come out and make sure I'm hungry. My best golf is getting better and better, and my worst golf is getting better as well. I just had the lines going really well," end of quote. Elsewhere, last week's BMW South Africa Open champion Chris Paisley enjoyed another fantastic week, finishing 5th and completing a top 5, which included 4 Englishmen. Matthew Fitzpatrick was one of those. The Sheffield man looked in fine form as he closed with a 69 to finish just 4 shots back alongside Rory McIlroy. Meanwhile, overnight leader Thomas Peters wasn't quite at his best on Sunday, the Belgian shooting a 72 on a day when only birdies were good enough. Rounding up the top 10 were Alexander Levy, solo 7th, Henrik Stenson, solo 8th, world number 1 Dustin Johnson made good use of a rare outing on the European Tour, the American closing with a 70 to finish 8 shots back within a share of 9th along side Paul Casey, Thomas Dietrich, Andrew Beef Johnson, and Fabrizio Zanotti. Other notables that made the cut, Tyrrell Hatton, Brandon Grace, and Brent Beesberger in the T15, Paul Doon, T19, Justin Rose, T22, Martin Keimer, T27, Matt Kuchar, T32, Rafa Cabrera Bello, T40, and among those who missed the cut were Ian Poulter, Lee Westwood, Graham McDowell, Ernie Els, and Race to Dubai leader entering the tournament, Wade Ornsby, who slipped now to 2nd behind Fleetwood. Some of the points that we can talk about this here to sum it up, Rory McIlroy, definitely he's back after a lengthy absence through injury. He has been powerless as a number of players from across the pond have been busy filling up their trophy cabinets and dominating the headlines in recent months. However, you know, the former world number one, who has 4 majors to his name, produced an impressive display in Abu Dhabi, firing a warning to his rivals that he'll once again be a force to be reckoned with this year. Rounds of 69, 65, 65, and 70 were not enough for a comeback win, but he looked fit and ready to add to his major haul this year. And much has been said of how strong America's Ryder Cup side is looking on paper ahead of the biennial contest this year in Paris, but if the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship is anything to go by, the Europeans could have a number of exciting talents of their own lining up in France. September may be a way off, but the likes of Thomas Peters, Thomas Dietrich, and Matt Fitzpatrick, just to name a few, look to have big seasons ahead of him. Ryder Cup aside, there is an exciting crop of players coming through in Europe who will provide some fireworks in the race to Dubai this year. And finally, Ross Fisher just needs a win. I mean, he will be bitterly disappointed with failing to close out the tournament, but it was some back nine from Fleetwood that denied him a first win in 4 years. In truth, there was very little that he did wrong. It was just all Tommy Fleetwood who won it. He didn't lose it. Doesn't seem that long ago that Fisher was one of England's brightest talents before a sliding form saw him overtaken by a number of his countrymen. But Fred, the big hitter, now looks to be a winner in waiting once again and will surely end his barren spell this year.
Yeah, Fisher's been up and down, but he's, you know, the last 2 years he's been kind of on an uptrend. So, you know, good for him. You know, he didn't get the win, but he's close. The interesting thing here, like the point you mentioned, the young guys, Tommy Fleetwood, Matt Fitzpatrick, all these young stars, Paul Dunn, these guys are really good, and they are putting the interest back in the European Tour for sure. But then the top story has to be, you know, Rory ending up with a third-place finish, getting back and playing. He's healthy again, hopefully. And, man, you throw him in the mix with all those young guys in Europe, plus come over here to the U.S. with all the guys we got going right now. I'll tell you what, it's, you know, we said it before, but this year is really looking good for watching golf. Hey, Carlos, let's talk just a minute about the Champions Tour. Jerry Kelly, the cheesehead from Wisconsin, got a one-shot victory over Monty in Hawaii. When it was in progress, I thought Monty was going to wrap it up. Looked like he had the Mitsubishi Championship pretty well in hand for the first one of the year, but Jerry Kelly had other ideas. Kelly began the final round in second behind Monty, and both were tied after 15 holes. Near disaster struck when Kelly drove his ball wide right into the lava rocks off the tee at 16. He hit a provisional but found the first ball, took an unplayable, and ended up making a bogey to fall one behind. Monty took the one-shot lead into the final hole but made a bogey while Kelly holed a birdie putt for the two-stroke win to win by one shot. Two-shot swing on the final hole to win. That's that is pretty exciting. Kelly fired a 66 for the final round, and Monty posted a 69. David Toms, Miguel Angel Jimenez, and Kirk Triplett rounded out the top five with Scotty McCarron, Fred Couples, and Doug Garwood all coming in T6. Tom Lehman, Vijay Singh, and Gene Sowers tied for ninth. And defending the first of his seven titles from last season, Bernhard Langer finished T16. That might be his worst finish all year, so we got to watch for that. Is Langer finally starting to crack? Is this the end for him? A T16, oh my God. So, Carlos, that's about all I've got from the Champions Tour over in Hawaii. I think you're going to talk about another one of your guys who also won this week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the earliest memory most fans have of Golf Star Sergio Garcia is of that young 19-year-old running giddily and breaking into a couple of scissor kicks after a remarkable recovery shot at the par 4 16th at the 1999 PGA Championship. The excitable, fearless Spaniard had only just lost the major to Tiger Woods then. But almost 20 years later, Garcia is much calmer out on the golf course, as witnessed by the thousands who thronged Sentosa Golf Club's Serapong course for the four rounds of this year's SMBC Singapore Open. The reigning Masters champion. Wow, that sounds incredible for Sergio Garcia. He ensured a flying start to his 2018 campaign by winning the tournament with a bogey-free display on the final day on Sunday, playing 27 holes after a rain-interrupted tournament. He went to the top of the leaderboard on Saturday after bagging three birdies in the remaining nine holes of his third round. He collected three more birdies at the first seven and eight holes and par the final 10 holes to win easily at the tough Serapong course. Any chance the chasing pack had of Garcia stumbling came at the par 5 fourth hole when he attempted to squeeze his shot between the trees, but the ball ricocheted off a tree into the fairway just before the water, and he managed to make par. The 38-year-old signed a final round of 3 under 68 to finish on 14 under, well clear of Japan's Satoshi Kodaira and South Africa's Sean Norris, who tied for second on 9 under par. Neither of those two managed to mount a realistic challenge for the lead, with Kodaira making 5 birdies with 5 bogeys and Norris moving up the leaderboard only on the last 6 holes when he had 3 birdies. Silence Jazz Jenny Watanampon with a 71, and then Sign Boonma with a 73. Also struggled to keep their scores down, but did enough to tie for fourth. With Singapore Open part of the 147 British Open qualifying series, you know, Jazz and then Thai secure themselves a spot at Carnoustie alongside American Sean Crocker and Australian Lucas Herbert. The four were the best finishers in the field who had not already qualified. Herbert got the last slot by virtue of his higher world ranking than Filipino Miguel Tabuena and American Barry Hansen, who also finished on 6-under. Speaking after his stroll to victory, Garcia attributed his excellent form to his family. He said that, and I quote, "When you are able to have a beautiful wife and daughter on the way, you're happy and everything is going well. Obviously, those things are important, and the excitement I've seen from renewing with sponsors is also important as all those things add up. Everything is very well and good." End of quote. Indeed, I mean, after going 73 events without a win, the weight of the tag, best golfer not to win a major, hung like an albatross around his neck. But after wrestling the green jacket last year in Augusta for his first Grand Slam triumph, the world number 10 definitely has a spring in his step. At the beginning of the year, Callaway confirmed that Sergio will play a full bag of Callaway woods, irons, and wedges, with a yet-to-be-released Odyssey Toulon putter that he's won with previously and a Callaway Chrome Soft X ball. Local fans would have been proud of Gregory Fu and Chu Se Yuan after the two Singaporeans finished tied for 16th at 4-under. A total of 30,000 fans turned up this year, up from 25,000 last year. But more than anything, they would have marveled at the masterclass by serene, mature Garcia, who seems on course for an exciting year. Fred, he will be on full confidence when he defends his title at the Omega Duarte Desert Classic this week and at the Masters in August and April. Watch out, Sergio is far from done and can only add to what is already, like you said, and we keep saying, this year has an all-time high in golf expectations.
Yeah, Sergio puts the new sticks in the bags, the new Callaway stuff, and wins on the first tournament out. So that's pretty big news for them. Good deal for Callaway. Hey, Carlos, the tournament doesn't wrap up till tomorrow. The Web.com Tour started on Sunday this week, so they only wrapped up the third round today. The final round is tomorrow, but Willie Wilcox carded a flawless third round 65, moved into the lead at the Bahamas Great Abaco Classic. He's 31 years old from Birmingham, Alabama. He's at 14 under par, one stroke ahead of last week's winner, actually, Sunhae Im, Ryan Gibson, and Adin Svensson. Wilcox tied for 13 in last week's the Bahamas Great Exuma Classic to get in the field this week. And last year, the former University of Alabama Birmingham standout competed in 14 PGA Tour events but only made 5 cuts. His last top 10 on tour was a tie for 6th at the 2016 Waste Management in Phoenix. "It's been a long time since I've played city golf," said Wilcox, who has won top 10 in his last 16 starts. "It's been a while since I can really say that I'm hitting it the way I know I really can. It's been a tough 2 years." So, if you want to see some live action, the final round is tomorrow on Golf Channel for the Great Abaco Classic from the Bahamas on the Web.com Tour, Carlos.
And to round up the weekend backspin, Joaquin Niemann, the number one ranked amateur in the world, was ready to begin a highly anticipated professional career this coming week. But now he finds himself forced to put those plans on hold temporarily. But don't fret. However, for the 19-year-old's future, the native of Chile will gladly wait for a few more months to begin the next stage of his golf career in trade for what he accomplished today and the reward that comes with it. Shooting a closing 8 under par 63 at the Prince of Wales Country Club in Santiago, Chile, Niemann turned what was expected to be a tense final round into a runaway victory at the fourth Latin America Amateur Championship, one stroke back of third round leader Alvaro Ortiz Newman, who lost a playoff in this tournament a year ago, finished with an 11 under 273, five strokes clear at day's end. The victory now comes with an invitation for this year's Masters, provided Newman is still an amateur in April, something he wasn't planning on being, but the Latin American Amateur Championship was going to be Newman's last event as an amateur, fittingly coming in his home country 8 months after ascending to the top spot in the World Amateur Golf Ranking. That ranking had already earned him spots in the U.S. Open and Open Championship later this year, but he already said he would pass them up to turn pro. So, you know, he was really that invite to play at Augusta National, as well as the exemption to the British and U.S. Amateur. Didn't look like it was going to come to pass after he shot an opening three over in par 74 to sit six strokes off the lead in T37, but he did bounce back with a second round of 64. And despite shooting a third round of 72-1 over, he was still in contention along with several others, but all told, 14 players were within three strokes of the lead entering the final round, but that 63 really sealed it for him. Ortiz, Alvaro Ortiz, a 22-year-old from Mexico who's in his senior year at the University of Arkansas, shot 69, 70, and 70, and was also hoping, like Newman, to win that loss to Toto Gana in the three-man playoff last year, but a closing 69 wasn't enough. He finished in second runner-up, but he does get exemptions into the U.S. Open sectional qualifying and an Open Championship final series. So Joaquin Newman, a great young player, amateur number one, that is one that we have to watch once he turns pro. He has all the tools, Fred, to watch out for him. So I can't wait to see how he's going to do in the Masters and after that.
Yeah, good for him. You know, these, like the Asian Pacific and this Latin American amateur getting these invites to the Masters, that's really big for these guys. So that's good stuff, Carlos.
So with that, we'll wrap up our weekend backspin where we recap the weekend's action on the major tours. Now we're going to look ahead on the four call to what's going to happen this weekend. And, of course, there's nobody else, nothing else that matters right now, like the song by Metallica, right? Everybody, all the eyes of the golf world are turning to San Diego in California, to the Torrey Pines Golf Course for the Farmers Insurance Open on the PGA Tour. Of course, John Rahm is the defending champion. He's going to be there. That's the reason, right, that everybody's looking at this, right?
Who cares?
No? That's not it?
No. No.
What happened?
But it is, you know, we're just doing the previews, but really this is the number one news item of the week for sure. He's back. You know, the and plus some other big names are in the field this week, but the really big name, Tiger Woods, is going to be in the field for the Farmers Insurance Open this week at Torrey Pines in San Diego. And the golf world is all a Twitter, as you mentioned. And, you know, it's like the first full field event for Tiger since way back at the beginning of 2017. And we know how that turned out. That did not turn out very well at all. So, you know, it is a very big week for golf. Where better to really get the season started in earnest than Torrey Pines, one of the country's most iconic golf courses, located just north of San Diego on the beautiful sand cliffs above the Pacific Ocean. As we all know, Tiger had to undergo spinal fusion surgery, and it appears he is finally able to return to competitive action. His first appearance in early December at the Hero World Challenge was positive, and hopes for the 42-year-old Tiger Woods to regain some of the old magic is at an all-time high. Another positive sign is that Woods has won eight events at Torrey Pines, the site of this week's Farmers Insurance Open. He even won a U.S. Open there in 2008, his last big win before all of the personal problems and injuries caused him to lose 3 years of competition. However, he hasn't broken 71 at Torrey in his last seven rounds. hasn't played a full four-round event since winning here in 2013. Also on the field this week is defending champion and number two in the world, John Rahm, as you mentioned, who's coming off a win last week in nearby Palm Springs. Hideki Matsuyama, Justin Rose, Ricky Fowler, Phil Mickelson, and Jason Day. So there's a lot of quality talent in the field this week, a lot more than played last week for sure. Another storyline, Carlos, and you missed this. I'm sorry. I'm surprised you didn't say anything about this. After John Rahm won the Career Builder Challenge last weekend, his fourth title in 51 weeks, he's closed the gap on Dustin Johnson to less than 1.5 points separate them. With Johnson not playing this week, the 23-year-old Spaniard has a chance to reach the top spot for the first time, but only if he wins the event and defends his title. So we got to watch for that. That's another storyline in the event. Even though we're going to watch Tiger, we got to see if John Rahm can win. In all, 12 of the top 26 players in the world are teeing it up at Torrey Pines. Carlos, this should give us a much better idea of exactly what we may be able to expect from this version of the Tiger Woods. The course is hilly, demanding fitness over the 4 days, and hitting shots off of difficult lies. CBS and the Golf Channel will be providing the coverage of the Farmers Insurance Classic, but you can start watching the coverage early at 11:45 on PGA Tour Live streaming. Featured groups over the first 2 days, Ricky Fowler, Xander Schauffele, and Patrick Cantlay. Justin Rose, Hideki Matsuyama, and Phil Mickelson. John Rahm, who we've been talking about, Jason Day, and Brent Snedeker. And then Patrick Reed and Charlie Hoffman are paired with Tiger Woods. So the Golf Channel has live coverage 3-7 on both Thursday and Friday. CBS picks up for the weekend 4-7 on Saturday and 3-6:30 on Sunday, Carlos.
You know, there's no love for Tiger Woods in Vegas. You know, they have him, the bets, they have him not making the cut. Can you believe that?
Oh, really?
I
think he's going to make the cut. I think he's going to be top 10. I really do.
So, you know, you should then go and bet in Vegas because they have him, I mean, they have not making the cut. And one thing is that he's career scoring average is of 69.09 at Torrey Pines. Consider that the last two times that he has played there, he has finished over par. So you can imagine if you throw those two out, how his scoring average is. But definitely, I see him making the cut. Like you said, four of the top 10 in the world ranking, John Rahm, Hideki Matsuyama, Justin Rose, and Ricky Fowler will be there. But there's another player that is going to make his 2018 debut that last year began at the world number one, and he's now at number 14, and he should definitely be considered like a top 10, and that is Jason Day. So looking forward to his comeback right now. The last seven winners have started the tournament on the South Course. So if you want to know who's going to win, if you take that into consideration, the last seven winners have started the tournament on the South Course. Hey, Tiger Woods is there. So he has a chance. He has a chance. And I don't know if you mentioned
Carlos,
the television. Yes.
I really think the thing to watch with Tiger is I really think he'll do well on Thursday and Friday because he'll be fresh. He'll have watched what he's done. He's not over-practiced. You know, I think he'll be fine. But the relief of making the cut, I think, and then the stress of playing on Thursday and Friday, I look for him to struggle on Saturday. I just, you know, and then he'll get pissed off and play and finish strong on Sunday. But, you know, I don't know. I just think it's a very hilly golf course. It's a tough walk. So we'll see. But the stamina thing and playing under real, I mean, playing in the Bahamas, that was more of a fun deal. There was no stress on that except for the fact that he was coming out to play and didn't know what to expect. But I think he had a lot of confidence that he was going to do well. But this is a different deal. This is the real thing now. And so I'm curious to see how he does over four rounds. It comes back to the stamina, the fitness, and his health to me.
You know, I have to agree in one thing. I think that Saturday is going to be a tough day for him. But I don't think that he didn't have pressure when he played the Hero World Challenge. Because
all
eyes were on him. All eyes were on him. And after what he had gone through the year before, and he had the all the jibs and all that, you know, he was shipping badly. He wasn't that good. I mean, everybody was expecting the worst out of him. So he had to have some doubts about himself. But the way that he composed himself all through the four rounds, even though when he was struggling there on Saturday, it shows that he really kept his mind on it. He's more focused. He really looked different. Mentally, he was a different – he was the old Tiger Woods, and it only gave him confidence. I think he's going to come here at Torrey Pines, which is one of his stomping grounds, and he's going to come with confidence. He's going to be playing with Patrick Reed and Charlie Hoffman, so he's going to feed off of Patrick for sure there. So I expect him to do well. I don't think he'll win. I mean, if he wins, wow. That would be – the world will be turned upside down if he does that. But we shouldn't be surprised if he does because of where he is playing, which is a place that he owns there, Torrey Pines. So, we have to see him if you want to watch Thursday and Friday, 3 to 7 p.m. Golf Channel, Saturday, 2 to 3:30 p.m. Golf Channel, 4 to 7 p.m. And on Sunday, it'll be 1 to 2:45 in Golf Channel and 3 to 6:30 on CBS. So I for certainly will be watching that tournament. But, hey, let's talk about now a tournament that's going to be happening on the other side of the pond, which is the Omega Dubai Desert Classic on the European Tour. It's going to be played at the Emirates Golf Course in Dubai in the UAE. The course yardage, it seems small. It's just 7,200 yards. It's a par 72, $3 million. Sergio is the defending champion. He'll be there. He's the number 9 right now in the world, and he's the highest-ranked player in the field, joined by the next 3 players behind him in the world ranking, Henrik Stenson, Rory McIlroy, and the Race to Dubai leader, Tommy Fleetwood. McIlroy, like I mentioned before, he tied for 3rd in the Abu Dhabi Championship and still remained at number 11 in the world because of the players around him also doing well. Pat Perez is playing Dubai for the first time. That means missing out at Torrey Pines, where his father is a longtime announcer on the first tee. Pat, how can you do that? I know, Tiger is playing there. One of the exceptions was given to Sean Crocker, the Zimbabwe-born and California-raised player who earned a British Open spot last week in the Singapore Open. Crocker played in college at Southern California, USC, so look out for him. He's a very good player. This tournament dates back to 1989, claims 10 major champions as its winners, including Tiger, who won it twice, Freddie Couples, and Mark O'Meara. The Dubai Desert Classic is 1 week earlier than normal. Instead of cutting the field because of the slight loss of daylight, the tournament has installed floodlights around the combined 9th and 18th greens to make sure everyone can finish the opening 2 rounds. The field will remain at 132 players. If you want to watch it on TV, Thursday, stay out late, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. or 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. in the Golf Channel. Friday is going to be 2:30 to 8 a.m. in Golf Channel also. Saturday and Sunday, 3:30 a.m. to 8 a.m. on Golf Channel. And the week next is going to be the Maybank Championship, Fred.
Yeah, we're going to finally get the LPGA season going this week, Carlos. Seems like they haven't played forever. It seems like nearly 2 months since we've seen the women of the LPGA Tour. It has been 2 months, really, since Aria Jutanagarn won the CME Globe Championship, but Lexi Thompson won the $1 million big check in the final event of 2017. Last year, Brittany Lynchcombe had to beat Lexi in a playoff when both women ended tied in regulation. This year's event will kick off the LPGA Tour season for the 4th time in its 6th year history. The players will be competing for a piece of the $1.4 million purse at the Atlantis Resort on Nassau in the Bahamas. The Pure Silk Bahamas Classic will feature world number one Shan Shan Fang. Defending champion Brittany Lynchcombe and Brooke Henderson are in the field this week. But if you're looking for a betting favorite, Carlos, how about Maria Jutanagarn? She had 11 top 10 finishes last season and led the LPGA in birdies. The confidence she gained last season may just pour over into this year. Golf Channel will provide the coverage of all four rounds Thursday and Friday, 11:30 to 2:30 p.m. And then on the weekend, 3:30 to 5:30, both Saturday and Sunday, Carlos. And that wraps up the forecast, the previews for this week. But we want to talk just a minute about, Boyne Resort in northern Michigan features 10 golf courses at three different locations around Petoskey, Michigan. The Highlands, the Mountain, and the Bay Harbor Club are all within a short drive of each other. Stay in one location and add rounds at the other to round out your trip. Whatever courses you play, don't miss a chance to play the Bay Harbor Club with its gorgeous views of Little Traverse Bay. If you want five-star accommodations, stay at the highly acclaimed Bay Harbor Inn and enjoy treatment normally reserved for royalty. Even though it's winter, now is the perfect time to take advantage of their early discounts. Book your summer golf trip to northern Michigan. Visit boyne.com/golf. That's boyne.com/golf, Carlos.
And with that, we wrap up the four call or the week or the quick previews for this weekend's action. We move on now to the par five news. Every week, Fred and I will tell you five stories that we pick that are worthy of notice. And definitely, he already told you which would have been the number one if we wouldn't do previews. That was the return of Tiger. But after that, something has happened to one of the game's brightest young star, Brooks Koepka. So what is going on with Brooks?
Well, you know, we started noticing that he was having problems at the end of last year, especially in the Hero World Challenge. He was last in the field, and we commented on it then. We didn't know what was wrong. But we've come to find out that he has a wrist injury. So Koepka had a year for the memory books in 2017, 13 top 25 finishes, two runners-up, and that little win at the U.S. Open. He moved into the top 10 in the official world golf ranking and became one of the guys to beat at every event he entered. In November, he successfully defended his title at the Dunlap Phoenix Open in Japan before teeing it up for the final time at the Hero World Challenge. It was in the Bahamas that he noticed discomfort in his wrist and put the golf clubs away for the rest of the year to let it rest. When he got to Kapalua for the Century Tournament of Champions, the problem persisted and got worse. He says now he probably should have not have continued to play and finished dead last there. Doctors were finally able to discern the problem is a partial tear to the tendon in his left wrist. The injury does not require surgery, but a strict regimen of rest was prescribed. The recovery is expected to take 8 to 12 weeks, which means Koepka is going to miss the Phoenix Open, Pebble Beach, the Honda Classic, which is a home game for him, plus two WGC events, one in Mexico and the match play. So the goal at this point is to try to make it back for the Masters. It's unfortunate for Koepka. Here he is playing the best golf of his life and is forced to sit and watch. Rory and Tiger come back, plus his buddy Dustin Johnson compete on the PGA Tour. Carlos is one of more instances of these young guys being so strong and swinging so hard that the body simply cannot handle the torque and pressure the golf swing puts on certain portions of the body. We saw Rory miss most of last year. Justin Rose continues to fight an achy back. Tiger with his multiple injury issues. And Jason Day struggled last year with injuries. We've talked about this before, and as these guys continue to seek more and more distance by swinging harder and harder, we're going to continue to have these types of injuries on the world golf scene.
Oh, we'll definitely do that. And that was what Monty, when we reported last week, he was referring to as how players keep trying to hit it harder and harder, and it's really painful what happens to them. I mean, Jason Day is another of those examples, and I mean, Dustin Johnson just said this week that they don't need to roll back the ball. I know that you're against that, about you're like Dustin, you think that, but to me, you know, they have to stop this, and somehow it's going to benefit the players in the long run. But hey, we'll see. We'll always be on top of anything that happens to any player, and we'll be reporting it to you as it comes, and we'll certainly follow Brooks Koepka's recovery, because he definitely he is one of the brightest young stars right now in the PGA Tour, and one of the bright stars there for the Ryder Cup. So that could impact what he's going to be, if he's going to be on the team or not. Hey, Fred, the LPGA is going to Hollywood. The LPGA returning to L.A. for the Hugel JTBC Open, which will debut the week of April 16 to the 22nd this year at Wilshire Country Club, right near the heart of Hollywood. Founded in 1919 and set in the historic Hancock Park area of Los Angeles, Wilshire is a links course designed by Norman Macbeth. This is the LPGA's first return to L.A. in more than a decade. The Tour's Office Depot Championship was held at various L.A. courses from 2001 to 2005. Wilshire hosted the 2001 event that was won by Annika Sorenstam. But the Hugel JTBC Open will be the third of four tournaments held in California this year, joining the A&A Inspiration in Rancho Mirage, the Kia Classic in Carlsbad, and a tournament that will be played in San Francisco. This gem in the heart of L.A. was designed, like I said, by Norman Macbeth, with design restored by Kyle Phillips, that has previously hosted L.A. Opens, PGA Tour Champions, and the LPGA. The tournament will feature 144 of the world's best LPGA professionals competing over four rounds for a share of the $1.5 million purse. The Hugel JTBC Open will be a 72-hole tournament sponsored by Hugel, who is a South Korea-based maker of beauty products that include Botox, and JTBC, which is the Korean cable television network that has broadcast rights for the LPGA. Fred, with a location between Hollywood and L.A.'s massive Koreatown, this is certainly a win for LPGA Commissioner Mike Wann's team. This is an A-plus move on his part. I mean, the whole Korea is going to be watching this tournament.
Yeah, you know, we've said before what a great job Michael Wann does. I was just talking to somebody about that yesterday, that, you know, and we were saying, you know, he has to be the number one sports executive in the country, really. I mean, he just does a fantastic job. And finally getting an event back in L.A., that's really big for the LPGA Tour. You know what? I'm going to tease you a little bit too, Carlos. I happened to think about this. I had another great interview yesterday with Eloise Trainer. And you're probably not familiar with that name, but she is the lady that started the Futures Tour. And ran it for 20 years, owned it and ran it, and sold it. The LPGA Tour owns it now, of course. It's the Symetra Tour. But I got a great interview with her. We'll play that, you know, over the next couple weeks sometime. But just give you a little tease there, Carlos. I knew you'd like that. Hey, you know, we love to talk about stupid golf rules on this show. And we found one of the most stupid rules ever in Montana, of all places. Several golf news outlets have reported on an archaic rule in Montana high school golf that prohibits anyone from watching a high school golf match while it's in progress. It's also been noted that New Jersey has such a rule in the books as well. How stupid is this? I'm sure some unscrupulous parents in the past were creating problems for their child or a competitor, but if you had told me I couldn't watch my child compete in a golf tournament, I would have told you you were nuts. Don't get in my way. In fact, I have spent hours trudging around numerous golf courses over the years watching my kids play golf and loving every minute. Well, most of it anyway. When I watch them needlessly hit the ball out of bounds or miss club into a difficult green, I wanted to scream, but I was able to restrain myself most of the time. Seriously, if someone said you can't watch your kid play football or basketball, there would be a riot. How can a state high school administration make such a stupid rule? When asked about it, school officials said that if parents or spectators would be allowed on the course to watch, they'd have to provide marshals. What? Again, I have been to hundreds of junior tournaments, and I have yet to see the first marshal. That is a stupid answer to a stupid rule. A problem is that no spectator means that college coaches are not even allowed on the course to watch future recruits. Yeah, let's make it difficult for a kid to earn a college scholarship. One of their justifications is that parents have been unruly and disrupt play. A concern for spectator safety and illegal coaching of players on the course. Now, I got to tell you, I go pretty much everywhere, and everywhere I go, I see people walking around there looking at their cell phone. The only danger is somebody tripping over a shrub or something because they're looking at their cell phone. But the point is, if a parent is on the course and another parent is bothering their child, there are cell phones everywhere. Simply call the clubhouse, get the local pro on the line. He will handle it. I guarantee it. They're trained for this stuff and know what they're doing. If you're concerned about safety, then you're at the wrong golf course. Although the Montana High School Association and its member schools have looked towards a new solution, the schools themselves would need to vote to repeal the rule, and that vote has gained little momentum so far. After we've had long discussions, a lot of those, maybe not as much for opening up their entire course, but moving more towards a spectator area, one official said. You know, the nearby state, Wyoming, always touts a higher population of cows than people. You know, I think Montana should join in with, we have more stupid people than sane people. Carlos, back to you.
What? No. There are no stupid rules. There are stupid people making rules. That's the way.
You got that? Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to John Ram. I haven't talked enough about him today, so let's talk a little bit more about him. You know,
we're going to have to move him up to the top of the news list. So he's like our number one guy now.
I've just said like 10 minutes of him, so we still have plenty of time. Anyway, John Ram has played plenty of golf with Phil Mickelson, and he enjoys the back and forth that comes with playing casual rounds with the Hall of Famer. Having had Mickelson's brother Tim as both his college and coach and manager, Ram has had a double dose of the Mickelsons. And though he's already ascended to number 2 in the world rankings, he finds himself in the opposite end of the spectrum when it comes to how he analyzes the shots compared to Phil Mickelson's approach. According to an amusing assessment he offered ahead of last week's career building challenge. And I'm going to quote him. You know, he said, "Now that he's with Tim as his caddy, it is really fun to hear how they talk to each other. Because Tim, being my coach at Arizona State, I don't need much. Okay, it's like 120, this shot, right? And then you have Phil. It's like, oh, this shot, the moisture, this going on, this is like 1 mile and an hour wind sideways. It's going to affect it 1 yard. This screen is soft, this trajectory. They're thinking like, I'm lost. That's what Ram said. He said, I'm like, God, if I do that thought process, I could not hit the golf shot. And it's funny. He gets to the green, and then it's the same thing. He's very detail-oriented. He gets there, and I'm like, oh, it's a foot, right? And he goes, okay, he reads the green, and like, it's 1.8 degrees of slope here, and this and that. I'm there listening, and I'm like, man, I hope we're never paired together for anything because I cannot think like this. I would not be able to play golf like that. For me to listen to all that is really fun, and when you hear me and my caddy Adam talk, it's like 100, a little breath into, okay, hard six, and that's it. That's all I do. You know, Fred, it's funny that approach, that those two approaches, and you as a golf pro, I ask you, what's your take on those two types of approaches on how to hit a shot? I mean, I know there's the very extremes like Phil was showing there, but I'm like John. I cannot just analyze it that much. It's like, okay, how hard is the wind blowing? It's going this way. Okay, I know my yardage, and I'll just pick the club, and that's it. But what's your take on that? I mean, how have you seen your players or the ones that you coach? What do you coach on that?
Well, the answer for that, there's a couple really. But number one is that everyone is different. That's the problem. And when you're coaching or when you're teaching someone, you have to understand what turns them on. There are some very technical people. There are some people that are very visual. There are some people that want to know every little detail. There's other people, just give me the basics and leave me alone. You know, I mean, everyone is different, Carlos. So, but I do feel that you can do too much. You know, I think Phil, and especially Tiger has gotten all wound up in these technical swing thoughts and issues over the years, and I think it cost him probably four or five major tournaments. I really do. And I think Phil, you know, just overanalyzes every little thing. And I think if he would just free up and just play, the guy is so talented, even if he made a mistake here and there, he'd counteract it by making much better choices and being freer and being more relaxed and playing better. So the short answer is, Carlos, that you can't say one thing is right for everyone. It depends on what works for the individual. Is that what you wanted to hear?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, that's my take there. I found it funny, but it's really interesting that there's those two sides. I mean, there's the ones that go right off to the edge of the smallest detail, how many degrees. I mean, it reminded me once, Fred, I was listening to this various years ago. I was listening to this Formula One driver, Lewis Hamilton, and he was saying through the radio, when he was making turns, he said, "I think the front right tire is 1 PSI low." What? How can you know that a tire is 1 PSI low because you're taking a turn at that high speed? I mean, I cannot. I was like blown away. When they came back, they put 1 PSI, and then he came back and he said, "Okay, now it's right. Now I can turn." No way. I cannot.
Well, you know,
I just got
Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus only hit 90 compression golf balls. And so, you know, we played McGregor's for a long time, and they would bring him out, you know, 10 dozen, whatever, McGregor golf balls, and he would grab some out of some boxes and check them out. And, you know, he was hitting some balls, trying that one day, and he told the guy there, the company rep, he said, "These are only like 88 or 89 compression." He said, "These are off. These are not 90 compression." And the guy thought he's nuts, you know, but he didn't say anything. And, you know, and so, yes, sir, Mr. Nicklaus, took him back to the shop and checked him. And sure as hell, they were only 89 compression. They were not 90. So those guys operate at a different level than you and me, Carlos, without question. But you can overanalyze stuff for sure. That's for sure. Hey, Carlos, I want to talk a little bit about golf pros. You know, we like talking about the club professionals. And when you go to any golf course and come away with a good feeling about that facility, chances are that a PGA professional is responsible for overseeing every aspect of the course operation to assure each golfer receives an enjoyable experience. In Monday's Global Golf Post, the publisher Jim Nugent listed the top PGA professionals in the country. He limited his list to directors of instruction or general managers because these are the best of the best, the guys who have worked their way up the chain and now supervise every part of a golf course. He didn't stop there. In addition to being great managers, he added another criteria that listed their playing credentials. these guys are not only good managers, they can play a little bit too. In all, 78 PGA pros were recognized from 38 sections across the country. The best of the best are recognized as number one all-pro. Beginning in 2015 with Bob Ford from both Oakmont and Seminole, Dave Potas from Bel Air Country Club in L.A. in 2016, and Rob LeBritz from Glen Arbor Golf Club in Bedford Hills, New York last year, the 2018 top all-pro is Rod Perry, a two-time National Player of the Year from Crane Lakes Golf Club in Port Orange, Florida. In addition to working at the course, Perry has played in 28 PGA Tour events over the past 15 years. To be able to maintain the commitment to a full-time job and still keep your game in shape and be ready to compete with the big boys is quite an accomplishment in itself. Perry graduated from the PGA Management Program at Mississippi State in 1996. Crane Lakes is a semi-private club, so he understands the rigors of dealing with a demanding membership as well as public greens fees players who are just at the club for one day. Perry learned the game from his grandfather, and when he was looking for a career, decided he might as well be doing something he liked. He's a golf guy through and through. It's what he does. It's what he is. Just one of his many jobs, running a retail shop, would keep most people busy, but Perry also managed to give over 300 lessons each year and oversee the 33,000 rounds of golf played at Crane Lakes as well. We salute Rod Perry as being named Global Golf Host's All-Pro of the Year. And if you want to see if your favorite pro made the list this year, visit globalgolfpost.com and read the article. Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 news for January the 23rd. And we want to thank one of our sponsors, French Lick. You know, the French Lick Resort has been serving guests since 1845 when they first came to the area for these soothing waters. The West Baden Springs Hotel, with its remarkable 200-foot domed atrium, originally built in 1855, was named the eighth wonder of the world. It's an awe-inspiring marvel still today. The great Larry Bird put the area on the map with his Hall of Fame basketball career, but French Lick Resort has always offered the finest service and hospitality to thousands of visitors every year. The French Lick Casino offers popular games a chance, and the resort offers the best cuisine available in any of the several restaurants on the property. Guests receive tender, loving care at the spa, plus the French Lick Resort has two fabulous golf courses. The Donald Ross course first opened in 1917, and Walter Hagen won the 1924 PGA Championship over Englishman James Barnes. The Pete Dye course sits atop the second highest peak in Indiana and provides views for up to 40 miles. It has hosted numerous big events. The PGA of America held the 2010 PGA National Professional Championship on the course, plus it hosted the 2015 Senior PGA Championship, and the Women's Legends Tour recently held their first ever Senior Women's LPGA Championship on the Pete Dye course. The French Lick Resort needs to be added to your bucket list of golf destinations. I guarantee it will become one of your favorites. To book your stay at the French Lick Resort, visit FrenchLick.com. That's FrenchLick.com. Carlos, back to you.
And with that, we wrap up our Par 5 news. Now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. This week, we'll have Brad Hauer. He's the Director of Instruction for Hammock Beach Ocean and Conservatory Courses. Brad, tell us a little bit about this interview that we're going to listen to.
Well, I got the chance to go to Hammock Beach for a couple days, and as I was getting ready to play the ocean course, I got to meet the Director of Instruction there, Brad Hauer. He's been there for 12 years, and talked a little bit about the restoration that the course just went through. It just reopened this year. And just go ahead and play, and then I got a couple of little comments for afterwards. How about that?
We're here at Hammock Beach Resort, just north of Daytona Beach in Florida, and we're happy to be talking with Brad Hauer, who is the director of golf here. Brad, sounds like you've been down here for a while.
Yeah, it's been 12 years, 12 wonderful years. Had a lot of fun dealing with PGA golf tournaments and hurricanes and restoration projects. So it's been a wonderful 12 years.
You mentioned restoration. We're here on the ocean course here at Hammock Beach. There are two courses, the conservatory and the ocean, but we're on the ocean today. And you mentioned it just came off of being closed for a year for a restoration.
Hurricane Matthew impacted our area in October of 2016. We had a significant storm surge that came onto the golf course. The water from the ocean went onto our drainage. The drainage all goes into the lakes. The lakes are all interconnecting. And as a result, the lake levels rose, and we had saltwater damage throughout the golf course. And to put that into perspective, our irrigation water is about 600 parts per million salt. Depending on the expert you talk to, Bermuda grass can handle about 1,500 to 2,000 parts per million. Well, ocean water is 33,000 parts per million. So we saw salt levels in the soils and in the water of historic proportions. All the experts that came in just acknowledged that they've never seen salt levels that high. So we definitely had a daunting task in front of us, but we developed a plan. The plan worked, and here we are. We've got just one beautiful golf course, and it turned out to be a blessing in disguise.
You had the Jack Nicklaus team to come in and do some changing, some updating. I think you moved some tees around a little bit and really kind of helped the course out.
One major improvement that we did is we added a forward tee. So now we have a set of tee boxes that are play 4,200 yards. And it's a huge success with the juniors. We've had a lot of juniors come here, and they're just really enjoying it because we build actual tee boxes for them. It's not like go stick the tee markers out in the fairway and say that's where the juniors play from. So they really feel like they're part of the golf course. As far as the design, we didn't really change the design all that much. We removed just one bunker, but it was pretty much getting the bunkers back into the original design and making sure that all the other aspects of the ground were in conjunction with the Nicklaus design.
One of the features of the ocean course is that you have six holes that actually play along the Atlantic Ocean. I think you have more holes along the water or along the ocean than any other course in Florida.
Yes, we have more holes on the ocean than any course in Florida. It actually almost measures to a mile-long stretch of oceanfront golf course property, which is just totally unheard of in Florida. And, you know, thanks to the hurricane, our views have gotten just tremendously better. It took out a lot of the material that had grown up over the years, and we're actually going to put the dune line back together and come in with a total different planning than what was originally planted. So we'll not only protect the dune line, which is first and foremost, but we'll also protect the views, the wonderful views that we have when you play this golf course.
We're standing here on the driving range. It's right across the ninth hole from the ocean. We're hearing the surf roll in this morning. Beautiful day, beautiful location for a golf course.
Yes, it is. It's when people get here, they are really blown away. They see it on the website, and it looks wonderful on the website, but when you get here on property and you see what we have going here, it is truly an amazing, special place.
So should mention also there's various dining options here. There's a swimming pool. There's all kinds of other amenities available, spa. You can buy condos. You can have a long-term residence here if you want to, or you can just come for a couple days. You can do it all here.
Our actual busiest time of the year is the summertime. We have families coming in. We have our three-bedroom units that are 2,000 square feet. Each bedroom has their own bath, and the families split these units. They enjoy our $6 million pool complex with the lazy river and a huge slide, and the access to the beach is so convenient. You basically walk right out of your room, walk about 50 yards down, and you're right at the beach. So the restaurants are phenomenal. Our sushi restaurant is just out of this world, and it's a great experience, and people really, really enjoy coming here.
Well, Brad, we're really looking forward to playing around here today, and thanks so much for inviting us.
Fred, thank you so much. We enjoy your round today, and hope you have a good one.
There you have it. That was Brad Howard, Director of Instruction for Hammock Beach Ocean and Conservatory Courses. Fred, anything else you want to add about that interview? Hello, Fred? Fred?
I'm sorry. I had a little coffee jag, and I put it on mute, so I'm back now. I'm sorry. Yeah, I want to mention that the they have a wonderful spa there also. My wife got to spend a little bit of time in there and thoroughly enjoyed it. They have a wonderful – there's a restaurant there, the Atlantic Grill, that it's all windows on one side. It sits right out beside the beach, and so you get a great view looking up and down the coastline with the waves rolling in. And then on top of it, the food is just first class. The chef and the staff do a wonderful job. The items there were out of this world. There's all kinds of real estate opportunities there. If you want to buy a condo or if you whatever you want to do, you want to lease, rent, whatever, they got all kinds of stuff going on there. But Hammock Beach is a great resort. We really enjoyed our time there and can't wait to get back there again, Carlos. So, but it was an enjoyed talk with Brad. He came out. We were hitting some balls getting ready for our round. I got to play with a couple of members there, and we just had a great day.
And there you have it. That was our BSG Very Important Guest of the Week, Brad Hauer, Director of Instruction for Hammock Beach Ocean Conservatory Courses. Now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and each of us take our own shots at it. This week, every year, Fred goes to the PGA Merchandise Show, which is an international trade fair for golf merchandise. And that's what we're going to be talking about this year, this week. And I'm going to start letting you know, it started in a parking lot when Dwight Eisenhower was president. Back in 1954, a time when Arnold Palmer was a paint salesman with an eye on playing on the U.S. amateur, and only 55% of American households had a television. A handful of club, ball, and apparel manufacturers congregated in the parking lot of the PGA National Golf Club in Dunedin, Florida, for what amounted to a glorified golf flea market prior to the Grapefruit Tour, which was what the Winter Florida Swing was called at the time. 3 years later, the gathering had grown so large that the PGA rented a circus tent to accommodate 50 merchandise reps. No one had formally named it yet, but those who wondered called it the show. That tented show moved with the winter tour for several years, shifting back and forth between Port St. Lucie and North Palm Beach. Then it went to the Miami Convention Center once it outgrew the tent. But when the new Orange County Convention Center in Orlando was completed in the mid-1980s, what was then recognized as the PGA Merchandise Show had a permanent home. In its 64-year history, all kinds of new products have been introduced to the masses at the PGA Merchandise Show. A strange-looking offset putter designed by Norwegian aeronautical engineer named Karsten Solheim hit the floor in the mid-1960s, and in the early 1980s, a former textile magnate from Georgia introduced the new hickory shaft wedge he called the Callaway Hickory Stick. I mean, throughout the years, the evolution of the show has mirrored the industry. The Van Hogen Company was once the dominant club company in the scene, and they brought in players like Tom Chanoury to add star power to their presentation. Meanwhile, TaylorMade, with its silver Pittsburgh Persimmon metal wood, had a small booth and a lot of activity. Simulators and launch monitors drew huge crowds in the 1990s as technology appeared on the verge of changing everything we knew about the game. Then Nike entered the business, and show spaces went from quiet and clubhouse-like to sensory overload 3D experiences. Now, the average PGA professional visiting the PGA Merchandise Show can walk more than 10 miles and still not see every display or visit every vendor. As always, this year's show will have the traditional industry leaders bringing their latest and greatest products to the world, but there will also be the startups, the guys with a few thousand dollars and a dream to create the next breakout item in golf. Fred, definitely, the PGA Merchandise Show has become the one place between the PGA Championship or, in even years, the Ryder Cup and the Masters, where everyone in the industry can gather together and see each other, where business is conducted and friendships are renewed, But more than that, it is where dreams are either nourish or die. So, I mean, to sum it up, it has that way in the beginning when that dreamer was an General Electric engineer named Carsten Solheim, and later when the dreamer was a retired textile exec and vendor named Ellie Calloway. This year, Fred, I'm sure it will be no different.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's one of the coolest things about the show, actually, is going into the new products area and seeing what's there. You know, a few years ago, I got to see the golf board when it was there, when nobody even knew what it was, hardly at the time. And, you know what that thing's been doing. And so it is really cool, and I enjoy going around talking to some of these inventors and some of the guys that came up with these ideas and talking with them a few minutes about their stuff, and, you know, their eyes light up, and, you know, they're all about it. So it's a blast doing that. But, you know, Carlos, nearly 1,000 editorial media professionals from 25 countries attend this thing and report on the products and events from the show. USA Today, The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Fox News, ESPN, Forbes Magazine, Popular Mechanics, you know, on and on and on of the media, large media outlets that come. Golf Channel alone provides, I'm surprised they didn't put the Back Nine Report in there, Ohio Golf Journal. I'm surprised they didn't put that in there. But Golf Channel alone provides more than 15 hours of live coverage, and Sirius XM PGA Tour Radio broadcasts nearly 35 hours of programming from the PGA Mercantile Show. So it is beamed out to everywhere. If you're not getting some kind of word about it, you're not trying. You are under a rock somewhere. In attendance at the show are over 1,100 exhibitors that can meet face-to-face with all golf industry professionals, buyers, manufacturers, and distributors to find the latest products for your facility or pro shop. 40,000 golf industry people representing 74 countries attend the show, walk the floors, look at all the products, buy stuff to fill their shop up for next year. And in addition, the PGA of America offers education sessions to help meet continuing education requirements for golf professionals. As I mentioned, the new product section is always a must-see. It's always a blast walking through there. And you never know who you're going to see. Last year, I was walking through the new product section right beside Hal Sutton. And he was taking it in just like everybody else. He wanted to see what was new, what was coming up. And then in the new products, a panel of PGA professionals and buyers judge these products based on the aesthetic or the uniqueness, their best feature for filling a consumer need, and then their packaging or merchandising support. And the top three products are voted by judges, and they're named New Product Award of the Year. In 2017, Frogger, Saber Sports Trainer, and the Zuzu Sports Apparel Company were named the best new products last year. There's even a fashion show to model all the new apparel lines that golfers will be wearing this year. One of the highlights of the show is walking through the clothing manufacturers area and viewing all of the various lines and their unique styling and designs and technologies. Big names come to the show also. It's not uncommon to be walking down the aisle alongside of Bubba Watson or Chichi Rodriguez or Stacey Lewis, for that matter, or other PGA, LPGA, or Champions Tour stars. If you're in the golf business, it's nearly mandatory that you attend or be involved with the PGA Golf Show. For me, it's a chance to talk with other golf industry media or business people that I interact with on the phone or through email, and you get to talk with them face-to-face. So it's always a blast. I enjoy coming down here. It's really a lot of hard work. It's a lot of walking. I know you don't feel sorry for me, but I am tired when we get done and glad to leave. But it's always a lot of excitement and a lot of fun to get here, Carlos.
I mean, the way that has grown, it's incredible. The PGA Merchandise Show is the show. It's an international trade fair. The golf merchandise, like you mentioned, more than 1,100 professional exhibitors from the golf sector looking to gain that visibility for their golf products, their accessory services, to those visiting the show. So, I mean, it's incredible. And I compare it to, I work in the technology field, and we do the Consumer Electronics Show at the beginning of the year also. And that is what everybody waits for in technology, to see what is new. In golf, this is the equivalent, the PGA Merchandise Show. Everybody wants to see what is coming up next so they can go and see if I'm going to buy it right away. And with that, we'll wrap up our practice range, where our talk, our annual talk about the show in golf, the PGA Merchandise Show. And now to wrap it up, we're going to have our final putts. I'm going to start talking about the 40-year-old Ben Curtis, who in 2003 emerged from obscurity as the 396th ranked player in the world to become the first man since Francis Ouimet in 1913 to win a major championship in his first start, which was the Open Championship at Royal St. George. He has been struggling for several years with the golfing lifestyle, which has adversely affected his ability to make a living in the game. When he and his wife, Candace, began to have a family, Curtis started to see golf no longer as an opportunity, but an obstacle to the things he wanted out of life. He was near tears a few years ago, talking about the struggles he faced, leaving his two children behind to catch another flight to another tournament that had lost its meaning. So Curtis is washing his hands off competition, allowing only for a return when he's eligible for senior golf in a decade. But he's not leaving, he's just merely switching gears because he's turning to teaching. Golf still has its hold on him. This spring, Curtis plans to unveil the Ben Curtis Golf Academy at Country Club of Hudson, a private club about 15 miles from his home. His goal is not to merely teach the golf swing, but impart knowledge on the whole game to youngsters interested in high school or college golf, or who have aspirations as a pro career. Curtis said it was exactly the kind of guidance he never received growing up, even being as immersed in the game as he was growing up. He said he had no clue, his parents had no clue, and that he was lucky that Herb Page found him. Fred, if the lesson is to get the most out of your talents, I can't find few people would be better to teach it than Ben Curtis.
Yeah, I've watched Ben Curtis since he was about 14 years old. Matter of fact, another guy from Ohio. I meant to ask you that, Carlos. I'm sorry I blew that. But my kids, one of my boys played against him in junior tournaments. And when he showed up, I mean, he would win by 10 strokes. It was unbelievable. There was nobody even close to him at when he was a teenager. So he was a great, great player when he was young. And wish him a lot of luck. He's a pretty good guy as well. Carlos, we want to give a shout-out to Gary Player and his wife, Vivian, who are celebrating their 61st wedding anniversary. And also, I mentioned to you before we went on the air that I had a chance to talk with Wayne Player, and we will have that interview talking about the new Player Amateur Tour on a future Backline Report. Also, to wrap up the show tonight, the Golf Writers Association of America announced that it will award the William D. Richardson Award for Outstanding Contribution to Golf to former Augusta National Chairman Billy Payne. The award will be presented at the 46th ISPS Handa GWAA Awards Dinner right before the Masters in April. Stacey Lewis will receive the organization's Ben Hogan Award, and Ernie Ells will receive the Jim Murray Award for longtime cooperation with the media. So, Carlos, that's all I have for tonight. I think that wraps up our Back Nine show for January 23rd.
That wraps up, like you say, another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest in the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Brett Hauer. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday here at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, you can check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also, remember to watch on Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, hey, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Now through January 30th, you could win one of more than 17,000 prizes in the O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card giveaway powered by Valvoline. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today, pick up a game card, and follow the entry instructions to see if you're one of 500 lucky gift card winners each day. No purchase necessary. See O'ReillySweeps.com for official rules and details.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.